Welcome to The Conversation. I'm Kyle Russell.
And I'm Dustin Jackson.
Dustin, I'm going to call you Dusto for the entire episode because I feel like that is a more ukulele accurate name, Dusto.
Thank you. That's actually my real name. Dustin is a nickname.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sorry I just doxed you.
That's okay. It happens.
Who am I?
Wouldn't be the first time.
Who am I? E3? Hello and welcome to The Conversation. We are discussing 5 years of ukulele today. And I know what you're thinking at home. Why? 5 years is nothing. 5 years is but a speck of sand in an hourglass that is time. We did 40 years of Donkey Kong last season. And then for DK Vine's 20th anniversary, we did 20 years of DK Vine. Both, big, solid, chunky anniversaries. And with this, it's 5 years. What's the big deal? Well, 5 years is actually pretty long. 5 years, when you compare it to the DKU in its prime, in its glory days, 5 years was the span of time between Donkey Kong Country and Donkey Kong 64. So you can fit a lot within 5 years, and I feel like Playtonic, for the modern gaming era, has done that. There's been quite a lot of output from Playtonic games in the last, 5 years? Is that what I said?
Yeah, I think so.
I'm already zoned
in.
That's
what the title says.
All right, yeah, it's a nice opportunity to reflect on where we've come with Playtonic, with ukulele, and where we're going next. So we're celebrating ukulele on this episode of The Conversation. And when I just said that Playtonic has done quite a bit over the last 5 years, they've done quite a bit this past week, Dustin. Excuse me, Dusto. Sorry, Dusto.
That's very true.
They announced and they shadow dropped a new Playtonic Friends release, which we had no inkling was in the works. We didn't know it was coming. Bam! It was dropped on Thursday on Nintendo Switch and Steam digitally. There are no physical versions available yet, but it is Demon Turf : Neon Splash. It is a smaller, speed running oriented sequel to last year's Demon Turf, which of course had an appearance by Yuka and Lele in it, which because of that, we classify it as DKU. And because it's the Playtonic Friends label, we consider it part of the Playtonic brand. And therefore, Demon Turf Neon Splash is also DKU. So I wasn't prepared for this, Dustin. An entirely new game coming out of nowhere.
Isn't that crazy? Isn't that crazy that can just happen? They can just drop a game.
It's infuriating because, usually when I know a game is coming and when it's delayed time and again and I have years to prepare for it, I can plan out my content accordingly. And so this week, DK Vine, because I lost the bet with Playtonic back in January, I rebranded our Twitter account as YL Hive. YL Hive. I used, I dusted off an old DK Vine ukulele logo. It's just DK Vine ukulele lettering that Cameron whipped up for us back in about 5 years ago when ukulele first released.
Wonderful job, Cameron.
Yeah, it's lovely. I dusted that off, superimposed it in front of Zinger Hives from Donkey Kong Country 2. And I renamed the Twitter account YL Hive for the week. And lost about 8 followers, but gained about 5. So I'm sure I'll lose those tomorrow when I change it back. But I was like, okay, we're going to have a week full of ukulele streams, which you and the Idaho crew did last Tuesday.
Very fun.
conversation, which we're doing right now, and an article, a feature. And I was going to get that feature up on Thursday, but then they announced Demon Turf : Neon Splash on Thursday, which meant I had to write a news article for it, I had to read up on it, and then I didn't have enough time to get the feature up. So the feature went up Saturday, and I'm just like platonic, you know, like, drop me a line, please. Like, let me know what you're going to do so I can, you know, space out my content appropriately. But anyway,
yeah.
Won't you think of poor DK Vine? Excuse me, YL Hive? won't you think of us, please? No, this is exciting. I loved Demon Turf. We did a conversation with Cameron about it last year. And it was one of those titles that I would have never played it had it not had Yuke and Lele, and had it not been published by Platonic Friends. And I did play it, and I loved it. It's a very fun spin on the 3D platforming genre. And I'm even though I'm not a speedrunner, even though I'm not Speedy McGee when it comes to video games, I mean, my regular Twitch programming that I host is called DK Vine Done Slow. And that is because I take an excruciating amount of time to finish a video game. So, you know, Neon Splash wouldn't necessarily be for me if I weren't already invested in Demon Turf. Plus, I just love the look of the game. It takes the hell aesthetic of the first game and it infuses this kind of 1980s vaporwave kind of feel to it,
mm-hmm.
which is really, really nifty looking. I'm excited about it. I haven't even been able to try it out yet, but we're going to be doing a conversation about it in probably a few weeks, and I'm going to give myself plenty of time to get the feel for it. But yeah, Demon Turf Neon Splash shadow dropped this past Thursday, so Platonic is surprising us even as we prepare this 5 years of ukulele episode.
Thank you, Platonic.
Thank you, and thank you, Fabras, who of course developed it. And I always want to say Febreze, which is of course the scented thing you spray when your garbage starts smelling.
Yeah, that's incorrect, but boy does it roll off the tongue nicely.
It does, and I don't know if Fabras also smells like. The Febreze I have in my household right now is like Hawaiian Tropics or something. So I'm sure they smell quite lovely. I've never sniffed them, nor do I intend to at any point in the near future. But where am I going with this, Dusto? I don't know.
Boy, not me. We didn't plan this little segment.
No,
very well.
I just go on these tangents about Febreze, and I start comparing developers in the video game industry to it. And before I know it, I just want to line them all up in a row and start smelling.
We do call you Heil the Febreze King.
Oh, yeah, that's my nickname. it's so I don't get doxxed by, you know, and I don't reveal my real name, which is just Heil.
Which one of these words is the real name?
I had to change my identity after E3 divulged it.
No, but I actually haven't played that much of Demon Turf, but I'd like to. I also really enjoy how it looks. I love how they're able to get a 2D character model, a sprite, basically, and just have it look so natural in this 3D world. It really gives it a very unique look, and I'd love to actually jump in and give it a whirl sometime.
Yeah, it really helps contribute to that otherworldly feel. Like, you feel like you're in a different realm, a hell dimension. And it's cool that they were able... I guess they had this idea for a secondary game, or they had... Maybe this was, like, unutilized ideas for the first game that they're like, let's just put it in its own package. And here we are. And it's really exciting to see. It kind of reminds me of, you know, back in the day when we would have, you know... a Super Nintendo release or a big console release, and then it'd be followed up the next year or a few months later with the handheld edition. And this isn't a handheld edition. I guess you could play it handheld, you know, with the Switch or Steam Deck, but you know, it's kind of the same thing, a little smaller adventure that puts a new spin on things. You get to revisit familiar characters and kind of broaden, expand the world a bit. So, yeah, I'm down for it. This is awesome. I always wondered, you know, what would be the first Platonic Friends game to get a sequel. I figured it'd be Demon Turf, but I didn't expect it to be this soon. So, and it's cool.
Same. I don't know if anyone really expected it. It, especially since it just came out of the blue.
And it's really cool that Platonic Friends is still publishing it, still continuing fostering that relationship. This is just an exciting time for the DKU, for Platonic, and for the fandom. And I mentioned, by the way, that feature that went live on Saturday. It's called Five Lists of Five for Ukulele's Fifth. And check it out. It's on dkvine.com. Hey, check out dkvine.com. It is the central hub to the DK Vine universe. I know a lot of you only listen to The Conversation or only subscribe to us on YouTube or only follow us on Twitter. You don't get the complete package, but we've got our tendrils. We've got our tentacles in so many crevices of the internet, Dustin, that, or Dusto. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. You'll get it.
I know. By the end of the episode. And then, of course, when we're done and I have to revert to calling you Dustin again, I'm not going to be able to. I'm going to be stuck. I'm going to be frozen in Dusto mode.
And I'm going to be so angry. I'm going to say, Heil, come on. I expected better from you.
It's going to destroy our friendship.
Just like this what does it.
Just like all of my other friendships have eroded based on shoddy nicknames.
It's interesting that you keep doing them. You know what the problem is, but you decide this is more important.
I'm an addict. I can't stop.
I get it. I understand.
Yeah, we've all been there with pills or booze. So anyway, dkvine.com, we're a great website. We've been around for many years, and you know, it's the pulse of everything DK Vine. So if you like Donkey Kong, if you like Rare, if you like Platonic, what the hell are you doing if you're not visiting dkvine.com? I don't know. I can't tell you that. That's for you to decide. But check out our feature, Five List of Five for Ukulele's Fifth. I wrote it, but I did it with the input of both Cameron and Gibbon. We put our heads together and we were like, let's come up with the five best things of Ukulele. And let's have five of those.
I give this feature 5 stars.
Yeah, I'm just afraid that Steve from off of Rare Gamer is going to sue us because that's his bit. The only reason I did 5 was because it's the 5th anniversary, so. I think the 5th anniversary is traditionally like the wood anniversary.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
I was wondering what anniversary it was before this. It's the wood anniversary, you said.
Pretty sure it's the wood anniversary, but I didn't want to be like, hey, let me give Ukulele wood. Because that has connotations, Dusto. I don't know if you're aware of a slang. But if you go to UrbanDictionary.com, another fine website that also exists alongside DK Vine, they have some alternate definitions for wood.
Wow. Boy, no one tell Mr. Woodchuck.
No, I know. Sorry, I was just imagining the head tilt up, down, and all around before he asked, wood? You know, as he does that, Mr. Woodchuck, the beloved.
Maybe
puppet.
They can get him to cameo in the next Ukulele game.
Hey, that's an idea. So anyway, 5 years of Ukulele, Dusto. Oh my god. So this isn't going to be completely comprehensive. We'll have future anniversaries for Ukulele, I'm sure, here on The Conversation. But it seems like an eternity ago, because time lost all meaning around the year 2020. So it seems like an eternity, it seems like yesterday, that Platonic was founded, or rather, they were officially announced as having founded in the spring of 2015, right? And they had that website, and it was a funny, quirky website that just announced their presence, and it was like, oh, this is cool, this is exciting. And we got Chris Sutherland on the conversation, and that was a huge deal for us. It was kind of like the first time a lot of people discovered the show. It was how we met our good friend Mitchell. Mitchell stumbled across DK Vine because he found the interview with Chris Sutherland. And,
wow, that's the lore. That's the lore of... You know what that means? That means me and Mitch's podcast, Telling the Tale, would not exist if it wasn't for Chris Sutherland.
Yeah.
And Platonic.
Yeah, if Chris Sutherland was erased from the timeline, you would never know Mitchell Wolf.
That's crazy. I don't want to imagine a world like that.
So yeah, that's the origin story of Mitchell. Some people have their parents shot in a dark alley. Some people are bitten by a radioactive spider. Mitchell listened to a podcast.
That's still pretty good. It's unique.
It is. You know, all the good origin stories are taken.
All right, what's left? Listen to a podcast. All right, use that one.
So anyway, we had Chris Sutherland on the show, and it was, you know, very exciting. And Project Ukulele, as it was then known, was only hinted at. And keep in mind where the DKU, where DK Vine, where the fandom was back in the spring of 2015. This was about a year after Tropical Freeze had come out. And we were still in the period where it felt like Rare had sort of collapsed in on itself. And in many ways, it had. They were in the rebuilding stage, because this was still several months before Rare Replay and Sea of Thieves were announced. And so, really, the only thing we had going on in the fandom right then was the hope that there would be another Donkey Kong game soon. Spoilers, there wasn't. but I mean, this was the period of the fandom where we had basically like written off Rare and the legacy of Rare. Not written it off in that we were like parting with it, but it was just like, we don't know, you know, what the future of Rare has in store. There were those unfortunate layoffs which really demoralized everybody.
Yeah.
And we put all of our eggs, because it is Easter, we put all of our eggs in the Donkey Kong and Nintendo basket. And we, you know, this is when the rumor mill was suggesting that there might be a new Diddy Kong Racing branded game by Nintendo in the works. Hi, Kevin. Hi, Kevin Callahan.
Still waiting on that.
Yeah, I Dusto, I don't know if I believe in Kevin Callahan.
Don't
that
say
much.
That.
No, I think I've lost my faith.
Oh, man. Yeah. You know what? You have no one to blame but Kevin Callahan. If he really wanted you to believe, he would have kept up. He would have made a fake Diddy Kong Racing sequel by now.
Even Kevin Callahan got bored with it.
He's like, whatever.
Kevin Callahan is...
I get it. Monkeys and cars.
Yeah, as much as a trickster god as Kevin Callahan was, he just kind of threw in a towel pretty early. it was just like everything was centered around Nintendo. And we even doubted Retro was going to do another Donkey Kong game anytime soon, but we were just hoping that something would be coming from Nintendo, because we didn't really have a lot going on. And then Platonic strolled in, and, you know, we had had some indie revivals that, you know, harkened back to the N64 era, that, you know, circa 1998. We had Kickstarters that promised to revive the spirit of 1990s Rare, and they either hadn't materialized, or they never felt like exactly the same spirit that we wanted. You know, they hewed more closely to Nintendo than they actually did Rare, you know. So it was just kind of like, oh, is this is this aspect of our fandom, is this stuff that we celebrated truly passé? Is it done? Is there no room in the industry for these types of games anymore? And then all of a sudden, here is a studio founded by Gavin Price, Chris Sutherland, Dean Wilson, Mark Stevenson, and so on. And it gave us reason to hope. And, like, almost overnight, it just, like, buoyed the mood of the fandom. And this is where, you know, Mitchell and I just discussed the Renaissance on the conversation. And this is where the Renaissance arguably really began. You know, we can pinpoint it to Tropical Freeze, since that brought back David Wise and everything. But this is when it was really a known quantity. Like, oh, you know, stuff is happening. And then E3 2015 hits, and we've got Rare back in full swing, and Playtonic, and it's the era we're still in right now. So I don't know, like, it felt like Playtonic was this oasis in a very parched desert that we had been walking through for quite a long time. And we certainly drank up from that filthy bog water, didn't we?
Boy, did we ever. Yeah, I remember being very excited when I saw Playtonic pop up with it wasn't, the Kickstarter hadn't quite launched yet, but just that initial website, the tease, yeah. I remember. And I think arguably that was the most exciting time, because at that point it was like, we know we're getting something. Because if I remember right, all we had was that teaser with the eyes of the main characters hidden in the bushes.
Yeah.
And, oh man, just imagination running wild with that.
Yeah, I remember when they announced the game as actually being called Yooka-Laylee. I was like, seriously? Like that's a pretty gutsy move to have a name that so blatantly homages Banjo-Kazooie. I say homage in the most delicate of ways. But, you know, I wasn't expecting Project Yooka-Laylee to actually be called Yooka-Laylee. That was a clever bit of misdirection on their part to just blatantly tell us what the game was going to be called. But yeah, and when they revealed it and it was a lizard and a bat, I was like, okay, you know, I'm more of a mammal guy, but I'll give the, I mean, I guess bats are mammals, but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I'll give this a shot. You know, I'm still very excited about it. I remember hoping at one point that both Yooka and Laylee would be, female. You know, I was kind of disappointed that they just went with the traditional Yooka is male, Laylee is female route. I would have been all on board with just have them both be girls, and who cares? Because I'm still very much like, give Dixie is the star of Donkey Kong Country 3. Why is Kitty in the promotional material so much? Get him out of there. But I came to really love Yooka and Laylee, and so obviously I don't think I would change it now. But just in those early days, I was like, all right, well, let's see how it goes. And I think, honestly, what really got me going, what juiced my citrus, was when Chris Sutherland responded so positively in our interview to me asking him if they would, you know, entertain the notion of a shared universe.
Ooh. Spicy.
Yeah, yeah. Because what's astounding to me is that Playtonic, I really do feel like Playtonic understands and listens and has continued to better understand and has continued to listen what makes their fan base tick. Because, you know, for all of the weird Banjo-Kazooie separatists that, you know, hold up Greg Mayles and Chris Seaver's statements stating that, you know, there was they never intended for a rare shared universe, and in their mind, you know, they're not in the same world or whatever. And then people are like, see, Banjo-Kazooie's not part of the same world as Donkey Kong. Stop having fun. I think
it's one of those things where, you know, development on those started before Diddy Kong Racing came out, so obviously they weren't planned to be a shared world, but that's the way it played out. So
yeah, I mean, yes, obviously intent was one thing, but execution was another. So
yeah,
I think so many fans of many properties always hold, like, especially in the Wikipedia era, the fan wiki era of fandom, they're fact-driven. They're like cold, hard fact-driven rather than even logic-driven. It's weird. Like, they take words of creators as indisputable fact, and they ignore in-universe evidence. If a creator says something that blatantly contradicts something in the games, then they're like, well, no, but they said that, so that's true. Like, if, for example, yeah, if I don't know... Let's say Chris Marlowe just got wasted one day and said that the Great Mighty Poo is actually not poop at all. He's a big puddle of vomit. I know, wow, a sizable percentage, like 30% of the fandom, would immediately change the Great Mighty Poo articles on the various Conker wikis and say, he's not actually poop, he's vomit, according to the voice, Chris Marlowe. It's like, what?
Boy, could you imagine a world like that?
Yeah. Hold on. I'm gonna crack open a cider because it makes me want to drink. All right.
Happy anniversary. I don't have an anniversary cider.
Yeah, that's okay. You can drink some wood.
My favorite.
Just put it in a blender and have a wood smoothie. Wood pulp smoothie. If you don't have any wood, I'm sure paper would suffice.
Oh, you know what? I got some paper lying around.
Yeah, just chew it up. Same thing. Just chew it up until you get into a nice ooze, and then you can lap it down, and that can be your fifth anniversary smoothie.
Yeah, happy anniversary, ukulele. I ate a bunch of paper for you.
Honestly, I don't even know what the if wood is. Wood sounds like the fifth anniversary element, right? Like, it might be might be Tupperware, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess there really isn't anything that would make me think five equals wood.
Well, anyway, yeah, but Platonic seemed to know from the start that a sizable amount of fans celebrated this notion of a rare shared universe, a Donkey Kong universe, however you want to define it, and decided to have that be the game plan from the start. And, you know, right now, as of this recording, Playtonic themselves have only released two developed games, Yooka-Laylee and Yooka-Laylee in the Impossible Lair. So it's not like they've spun off a great deal, many characters. I still think that could be the plan going forward, but they are keen, and they have shown that they like to use their characters and celebrate their characters and bring back their characters and actually have the characters grow and evolve from their experiences from game to game. And we've just seen that between Yooka-Laylee and Yooka-Laylee and the Impossible Lair. But I mean, just for example, right, Rampo. When you run into Rampo, the first world boss in Yooka-Laylee, when you run into him in Impossible Lair, he's still, like, recovering from the boss battle in the original Yooka-Laylee. He's still getting dental work. He's taking up a new job to afford it. And I just love that. I love that this universe that they're creating has stakes. It has consequences. Things don't exist in a vacuum from game to game. I don't know, what would be an example of a game series where they do bring back characters, but there's really no continuity or development from game to game. Would it be fair to say Kirby is one of those? Like, every time, like, a boss character comes back from Kirby?
I guess kind of, yeah. Like, Wispy Woods, for example. He comes back and he's just a tree.
Yeah.
A great tree, but he's just the same tree every time.
Yeah. And yeah, like, Rampo actually is, like, recuperating from the beating he took in Yooka-Laylee. Well, I love that. I love that there is this continuity and attention to detail. It rewards fans. And yeah. it makes, like, anybody who jumps in with Impossible Lair, I feel like, would maybe want to jump back to the original Yooka-Laylee then to kind of get some context. And eventually, somewhere along the line, it's going to be too insurmountable to, you know, play catch-up. It's going to be, like, my problem that I've lamented about Kirby, where it's like, well, you know, I would love to play the new Kirby game that's out, but I'm, like, 25 Kirby games behind. And at this point,
I gotta know all the Kirby lore.
Well, I mean, yeah, sort of. Even if there isn't as much Kirby lore, you know, as there would
be. There is some.
There is some, yeah.
There,
even if there's not as much as there is in Donkey Kong or, you know, Platonic games, I still want to know it, and I still feel like I'd be too far behind to really appreciate the finer nuances. So I'm just not going to do it. I'm just like, nah, Kirby, I missed my chance with Kirby. Sorry, yep.
Maybe in the next life.
No, then I'd be even farther behind. I would be a baby, and I would have to, like, learn my motor controls, and then I play my first video game, and then how many Kirby games are going to be out by then, Dusto?
That's true. It's just forget it. I don't need to go into all these Kirbys.
But what really obviously impressed me with Playtonic and the original Yooka-Laylee is they didn't need to put an unnamed goldfish in the game. They didn't need to do that, Dusto. Like, they, we were campaigning for it online throughout 2015 into early 2016. And most reasonable studios would have just ignored us. Because we're shouting, barking, even, at the moon. But guess what? They did it. They put an unnamed goldfish in Dr. Puzz's bowl. And it's just there to suggest that there might be a connection between Playtonic's world and what came before. You know, for example, Banjo-Kazooie, Grab by the Ghoulies, Viva Pinata, Kinect Sports Season 2. You know, everybody's favorites. And they also didn't need to make allusions and outright references to Donkey Kong, Banjo-Kazooie, Conker, and even It's Mr. Pants, among others. But they have. They gave us all of that from the start. Like, they indulged and nurtured the concept of DK Vine's insanity? So, it works both ways, right? Like, they've got those built-in DKU connections that are, you know, legally permissible. And then they're also building up their own convoluted lore and stuff with their own characters. So it's just delightful. And it's delightful, like, how much they get it. How much they get our passion. And the weird, rare fandom passion for characters above all else. And you know what I also really appreciate? You know, as much as the name Yooka-Laylee initially, like, just shocked me with its brazenness and how on the nose it was, I really have enjoyed seeing the characters develop and evolve in the last 5 years beyond being the mere XPs of Banjo and Kazooie that they were back in 2017. It's kind of wild how we've also reached the point where I'd be fine if they never connected the broader DKU to Platonic titles again. I mean, we've got all of these references, right? We've got references to N'Gar, to Zingers, to, you know, the anti-gravity chocolate in Cracklestone. We've got all these things that just tie it into the great grander DKU shared universe structure. But I have really started to just enjoy Yuka and Laylee and Trouser and Dr. Puzz and Capital B as characters in their own right, that I'm to the point where, like, I kind of like them nearly as much as I like those characters that I grew up with. And if they never connected to the broader DKU again, I would be fine. It's, you know, to bring the MCU into this again, Dusto. but it's like the early seasons of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I know you know what I'm talking about here.
Oh, of course.
You know, because the early episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. were pretty dire. And you wanted Nick Fury or Maria Hill or somebody from the movies to show up to give you a reason to be invested. But then, you know, they get to season 4 and the LMD arc, and you're like, whoa, this show has gotten good. I don't need you to reference Tony Stark anymore. I'm interested. I'm invested in these characters now. And that's how I feel after Impossible Layer and Cracklestone. And even going back retroactively and playing the original ukulele, as I did recently, after Impossible Layer and Cracklestone, and I'm like, I am able to appreciate it on a different level than I was 5 years ago, because now I really kind of understand the characters better. And even if that development happened after ukulele, it's still fun to go back and experience those characters knowing how I know them now, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, definitely. It really works as like a way to kind of hook new people in, saying like, oh, look, here's a little reference here and there, and then a little time to build up their own world on their own. And by that point, you know, you don't need to reference that, since you just have so much in your own world you can go off of. But I do really like that they really know the perfect balance for having new stuff and having little fan servicey references to older stuff without letting it become what it is. You know, it doesn't become bogged down with its past with just references to other things you might know. Especially with Impossible Lair, you know, the first game is great, but I really love how Impossible Lair kind of gets its own art direction. It really feels like its own world. That was one of my favorite things playing through Impossible Lair, just last Tuesday, just admiring like, the towns, just, the art direction in this world. Now it feels so distinct from like a Banjo-Kazooie or a Donkey Kong. Yeah. And that's awesome. I want to be in this world.
Yeah, I really feel like the original ukulele, there are a few things going on with it that maybe held it back. One, and you brought this up on a stream, it might have just been a little bit of rust. A little bit of rusto. You know, it was their first game of this nature in many years. Hell, it'd even been 9 years since Nuts and Bolts by the time it had been released. So, oh my God, is that right? Yeah. That doesn't seem possible. So there was that. There was the fact that it was a Kickstarter campaign with all of these, you know, metrics they had to hit. And so they kept throwing in things like, well, we'll have minecart sequences, we'll have arcade games, stuff that didn't necessarily make sense for the game to really have. And so it was kind of the case of death by a thousand cuts. You know, they were working under all of these criteria and conditions. And I really like the original ukulele. You know, I just finished replaying it recently, and it's something that I actually enjoyed way more this last time than I did back in 2017 when I first played it. And I enjoyed it then, but I was able to appreciate it on a different level now. And that being said, you know, there was sort of an inconsistent art direction. It was kind of like this weird patchwork quilt of the entire DKU, because you had so many divergent and contrasting styles all coming together. I mean, it was really this giant jam session for so many creative talents across the entire spectrum. I mean, hell, you had David Wise and Grant Kirkhope, you know, doing music. And I mean, you still get that Impossible Layer, but I feel like they have a better blend. But you had, you know, all the different artists, and it was just like tonal whiplash going from world to world and experiencing different things. And it kind of worked in some ways, and it kind of didn't work in other ways. But you're right, Impossible Lair just pulls it all together. There's a unified vision there that still feels very true to the spirit of what Platonic is trying to do, but it feels consistent. And it's really like the first time in a game that you feel like the world of Yooka-Laylee has its own identity, and it's such an exciting identity at that. And that's one of the reasons why I think Impossible Lair did so much for Platonic. It might not have had the sales or the recognition or the notoriety of Yooka-Laylee, but it definitely showed that they are capable of making I'm just going to say 5-star, because it is a 5-star top-tier platformer. I mean, it's magnificent what they were able to do. But you know, it sounds like I'm being harsh on Yooka-Laylee and the original Yooka-Laylee. And I just want to be clear, I really do like the original Yooka-Laylee. It's so much fun. I think the sheer joy of Yooka-Laylee that I've really embraced over the last 5 years is that it's just fun to run around and goof off in Yooka-Laylee. DK Vine's staffer and the person behind our Instagram account and conversation legend Joe Mudd had this to say just a couple of days ago, and I quote, "It's brilliant having so much freedom to explore. Feels like the most sandboxy platformer since Mario 64. And I can't judge the accuracy of that, because the only 3D platforms I've really played since Super Mario 64 are Banjo-Kazooie, Donkey Kong 64, Banjo-Tooie, Conker's Bad Fur Day, Conker Live and Reloaded, Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts, if it counts, Yooka-Laylee, and Demon Turf. I played Demon Turf recently. But I think he's right, because it does feel like you have so much freedom to just do things your own way. There might be a set way you can get like a pagey or find a quill, but you can just try your own thing. Try to scale the walls of Tribal Stack Tropics. You can figure out your own method of madness to get the stuff. And it's fun and it's satisfying. Like I said on our developer commentaries for Yooka-Laylee way back in Season 7, I did those with Mitchell, it's easy to forget that Yooka-Laylee is technically an indie title. And it punches so far above its weight class in a lot of areas that I think people get hung up on its flaws, because, yeah, you associate it with a higher budget release. But if you can get past things like the dodgier Rextro games and some of the Kartos segments and just the flat-out evil quill placement, I think it's really fun. And I think, maybe controversially, that it controls way better than Banjo-Kazooie does.
No, I think I agree. Like, overall, I still prefer the Banjo games, but it's just fun to move around as Yooka-Laylee. I don't know if loose is the right word, but they feel smooth is the right word smooth. I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Yeah. They just feel really nice and quick. I would say that the controls are definitely the best part of the first ukulele.
Yeah, it's just so fine-tuned. And I know I'm retreating a lot of ground here, but I also think it's amazing how well thought out everything is. Because aside from the aforementioned fact that the characters are named Yuka and Lele, everything else ties into this concept of pages and the one book and then the ghost writers who wrote the grand tomes and the quills. I think it's thematically unified in a way Banjo-Kazooie never really was. You know, because Banjo-Kazooie, you had puzzle pieces, but music notes, but honeycomb, but Jinjos. And it's like there were five different ideas all trying to get in there. And you can definitely see how Banjo-Kazooie evolved over time from a game, a fairy tale game, to a game about pirates, to a game about a skateboarding bear, to a game about a bear and a bird. You know, it's just like this snowball that slowly, you know, builds and gathers debris along the way, where ukulele, they kind of broke it down and be like, okay, so how are we going to tie everything together? And I think they did a great job. I think that just the concept of grand tomes allows for so much possibility. And they've really explored that possibility in the two games and graphic novel that they've done as official ukulele products.
Yeah, definitely. Another thing I really like, speaking of just how much thought is put into these, one thing I really like is that all of Yuka's moves, or at least most of them, they are, you know, chameleon. They tie into him being a chameleon. Yeah. If you look at Banjo-Kazooie, I love Banjo, but boy, he sure doesn't have a whole lot of moves that tie into being a bear.
Yeah, yeah. And this sounds like we're slagging Banjo-Kazooie to build up ukulele. We're not doing that. I don't think...
Yeah, I would never do that.
I don't think you'll find many people who like Banjo-Kazooie more than Dusto and I. Like, it's... Excuse me, Dusto and me. But my grammar is just shot to hell.
Probably, that's okay. I'll forgive you.
No, it's probably brain damage from all the wood pulp smoothies I've been drinking to celebrate Ukulele's fifth anniversary.
Hey, it's worth it. You only turn five once, I assume.
Yeah, why? I remember my fifth birthday, and my parents just shoved all that wood in my mouth, and they're like, "Chew, chew, damn it!
Come on, we're counting on you to make us a dam for the winter."
Yeah, but yeah, and Lele too. Lele has so many bat moves. Like the fact that they incorporated sonar, I really appreciate. It just feels like everything works in concert with each other. And I don't know how well that's appreciated by people who maybe played ukulele when it first came out and they're like, well, I don't like this as much as Banjo. Disappointment. And then they never pick it up again. But if you dig deeper, if you really get into the nuances of it, or if you don't get hung up on things like the fact that the quill placement makes no sense in a lot of areas, or that maybe some of the worlds are too spread out, or that the expansion of the Grand Tomes concept never really pays off like you hope it does. Yeah, there are faults and flaws, but when ukulele works, I think it really works well. And I think there's just so much room there to build and hone and fine-tune for an eventual true sequel, which I'd be really excited to see what they could do with. Like, strip away all of the limitations, all of the promises, all of the hoops they had to jump through, and all of the hoop games you had to jump through in ukulele to get pages. You strip all that away and you take what works, discard what doesn't, I think you would have an amazing 3D platformer that may actually rival Banjo-Kazooie.
Definitely. I'm super excited to see if we ever get a straight-up sequel to Yooka-Laylee, another 3D platformer. I can't tell you how excited I am to see how that plays out.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's been perhaps erroneously reported that they're working on one, and Playtonic retweeted a Nintendo Life article saying they were, and then they unretweeted it, so who knows?
But yeah.
They're like, oh, wait, you know, we've changed our mind. We're deleting it. we're not actually working on it. But we'll see. I am sure we're going to get it sooner or later.
Yeah, I feel like, just like I would assume we'd have to get a new Banjo game at some point, I would assume a new Yooka-Laylee game, another take on a 3D platformer Yooka-Laylee game, would more than likely happen at some point in the future.
I would even say we'd be getting it way before a new Banjo-Kazooie game.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Impossible Lair, Dust, I know this is 5 years of the original Yooka-Laylee, but we're encompassing everything here. Impossible Lair, one of the great conundrums that has plagued DK Vine since the year 2000 has been, do you prefer Banjo-Kazooie or Banjo-Tooie? What kind of person are you? And sometimes, you know, that thought
Me?
Experiment. No, I'm not specifically asking, although I am sort of curious now.
I'm a Banjo-Tooie guy. I love a lot of what... I would say Banjo-Tooie is my favorite game, and then Banjo-Kazooie is my second favorite game.
Oh, wow. So you're just right. See, I'm more complicated. I would say Donkey Kong Country 2, Diddy's Kong Quest, Sea of Thieves, Banjo-Kazooie, Diddy Kong... No, Grab by the Ghoulies is my number 4, actually. Diddy Kong Racing is my number 5.
I mean, after those two Banjo games, it gets really muddy. I couldn't tell you what my, like, third favorite is.
Yeah.
I just like everything else about the same.
Sure.
I'm like, oh, these are just all perfect and great.
But, you know, it's one of those things that isn't as clear-cut as something like, what Donkey Kong Country game is your favorite? You know, some people might, you know, really argue over 2 or 3 or 2 and 1. But Banjo-Kazooie and Tooie, I think, is the harder question because, like, intellectually, I like what Banjo-Tooie does a lot more, but I like playing Kazooie way more. Like, it's this weird disconnect with me, and I think it plagues a lot of people. And I think going forward in the future, something that will actually eclipse the Kazooie versus Tooie argument is, what do you like better, Yooka-Laylee in the Impossible Lair or Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze? I already see this come up so much, this argument, and I see it amongst the DK Vine staff. I know, like, for example, I'm not trying to put too much of a spotlight on him because he's not here right now, but Jeff, I think Jeff prefers Impossible Lair. And he said, this is why Tropical Freeze got it wrong, and this is why Impossible Lair got it right. And I'm not that I'm not that absolute when it comes to it. In fact, talking about my top 10 favorite games, both Tropical Freeze and Impossible Lair are both, like, right next to each other on the list. But Impossible Lair seems to be creeping up more and more each year, and I think I like a lot of what it does more than Tropical Freeze, but I love Tropical Freeze. It's hard. And as time goes on, I'm just more charmed by Impossible Lair. Dustin, when you were streaming it the other night, you said if only Impossible Lair had the same budget the Tropical Freeze does. And I'm like, it's a good way of looking at it.
Yeah, we were discussing this exact thing on the Idaho Crew stream the other day. I really do. Personally, I think I prefer Tropical Freeze, but only by a little bit. And I think I would say Impossible Layer is the more impressive of the two, just because of what it pulls off with what it had.
Yeah.
Because, like, Tropical Freeze, you know, it's a wonderful Donkey Kong Country game, but that's from Nintendo. That's from this big company who is able to make something like that. Playtonic is still an indie studio. They're small. They don't have the money to make a Tropical Freeze-esque game. So I think the fact that they even came this close, it's very close. And I do think Impossible Layer does some things a lot better. And I just think if Playtonic was given those same resources, if they had like that much staff, that much money, and they were able to just put it all into a new game, I don't doubt that they could make a game better than Tropical Freeze.
Yeah. And I play Tropical Freeze and I play Impossible Layer. And honestly, I sometimes don't even realize, or I forget that Impossible Layer has less of a budget, because it does so much with, you know, comparably so little compared to, I'm sure, the budget Tropical Freeze had. It looks gorgeous. It's so inventive. The way it takes the concept of a map screen and turns it into a top-down overworld. I mean, my God, that is exactly what I wanted out of Donkey Kong Country 4 back in the day. When I would think, if Rare ever went back and revisited Donkey Kong Country and actually made a new Donkey Kong Country game, I would want it to build off of where DKC3 left off, with its map screen and the bartering system and just the more complexities that you found outside of the stages. And my God, Impossible Layer, I say it again and again, and I don't care how much I repeat myself, Impossible Layer is the Rare take on DKC4. It is the alternate Donkey Kong Country Returns, just sans Donkey Kong characters.
Definitely. I think the only spot for me, like, I adore Impossible Layer, but I think the only area where the budget really shows is I feel like the level archetypes aren't quite as varied, but then they do so many ways to mix it up with like the state changes for each stage. They have 20 stages and they double it to 40 just with the changes you can do to them. So I think that more than makes up for only having, like, you have the city stages, have the woods factory. That's about it, really. Maybe like one or two others, and that's not a lot, but they really make the most out of them and find wonderful ways to make them feel unique.
Yeah, the whole state change concept and the way they go about each state change, like, there is this logic on the overworld. Like, okay, why is this level suddenly going to change into this new concept? And so it usually involves something getting dumped on the book, or, you know, a weather change or something catastrophic happening. And it's really clever and fun. And it usually involves a character that's interacting with you on the overworld. And it's just the kind of nonsense that I obsess over. I mean, not to spoil too much from Impossible Lair, but just the fact that you go back to the first level at the end of the game, and sort of placid, tranquil city/town, right? Capital Causeway gets fished by one of the Blamphibian anglers, the Blamphibian angler from Galleon Galaxy, whose name is Rodney. He fishes it up and he just descends the whole world into chaos. Just this nightmare state. That's just like, yes, that is exactly the type of game design that I worship. Yes, worship. Where you don't just say, okay, this is why this is happening because it's a video game. You have characters fill that role. You have actions fill that role. You have story. You have world building. And it makes everything feel so much richer and so much more believable. And you're that much more invested as a result.
Right. That is one of the things I very much prefer in Impossible Lair over Tropical Freeze. In Tropical Freeze, is Funky Kong like the only character that talks? Well, you also have talks as Parrot, but that really isn't that much. Impossible Lair just has characters all over the place, including Yuka and Laylee. Yuka and Laylee talk. You don't get that out of the Kongs, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, not anymore. So, no, it's very much Nintendo's MO to have silent protagonists, to have this economy of characters. Like, you only have as many characters as you need to fill the basic gameplay functions. And then, like, they have this very, like, scaled down, stripped, classical beauty kind of ideas behind video game design. And Rare and now Playtonic have always, like, had a lot more eccentric flourishes, and, like, they have some fun with it. And I think that's what really, like, builds the fandom for their games is, you know, we do like characters. It's the same issue that, you know, for example, Paper Mario fans are running into, where you just keep stripping out all of the nuances in for the purpose of gameplay or branding or what. I don't even know, but
it's sad.
It's frustrating. It's frustrating. Yeah. And that's, thankfully, Playtonic understands where we're coming from and what we love. And yeah, the character Rodney, not to be confused with the the hair from Donkey Kong 64, but that character Rodney in Galleon Galaxy, you brought him back and you basically caused a mini apocalypse. And like, that's just fun. And you see him just sitting up there, you know, the entire game, like, oh, what's that Blamphibian doing up there? And then eventually you realize, like,
I'm going to destroy a town.
Yeah, and the state change occurs. And I think isn't that the level with Cameron's Bee?
I think so, yeah, that's right. Because the state change for the very first stage.
Everybody was like, where's Cameron's Bee? Cameron's Bee is in here somewhere. I haven't found Cameron's Bee. And it's at the very end. He gets the most memorable stage placement.
That's true. Cameron really... I was overjoyed to find my friend Cameron inside of a video game.
In a mini apocalypse. I always knew Cameron would be at the center of the end of the world.
He has that vibe.
I can't say enough good stuff about Impossible Lair. It is already in my top 10 favorite games of all time, and I think it's slowly climbing the ranks. I think it's going to continue to age like a very fine wine or a cheese that doesn't give you diarrhea.
That's what it should say on the back of the box, like a cheese that doesn't give you diarrhea.
You know, the downside to video games compared to things like books is that you only get your advanced copies like a week or even less ahead of release. So they never use your pull quotes for video game boxes. And I have so many great quotes I could give them, but they'll never get to use them.
Maybe someday. Maybe technology will catch up and you'll be able to use them for anything you want.
Yeah. Playtonic, if you ever want a good quote for your boxes, most of mine are about diarrhea. But I'll give you a good one.
Yeah, you'll at least sell a couple more copies with it.
You know, people like poop. And that's what I'm always saying. Poop sells.
You do always say that, like, every day.
Look, poop sells in this day and age. What can I say?
What are people going to wake up and get it?
Another thing Nintendo doesn't understand. We also had Ukulele in the Cracklestone, which we, Cameron and I, discussed last season on The Conversation. Is Ukulele in the Cracklestone as good as we made it out to be, Dusto?
That's interesting that you ask that question, Heil. You're gonna love my answer, and my answer is I haven't read it yet.
Oh my god, you would love it! I know I want to.
I've been busy, but I got it. I got the limited run version the tome comic cover, and I have flipped through it. You know, I've seen preview pages. It's gorgeous looking. I love how it looks. I just haven't been able to sit down and read it yet. I did start last night because I knew it was going to be in this podcast.
Yeah.
And then I fell asleep while reading it because I was reading it at 3 a.m.
Well, here's what I want you to do as soon as we're done with this podcast. I want you to draw yourself a nice warm bath and take that bath. Really relax. Get into a nice comfy dressing gown, which I know you have. And I don't know, pour yourself a nice glass of paper smoothie. And I want you to cuddle up on the couch with your book and just really sink into it, because it is one of my absolute favorite graphic novels of all time. Now, I'm not saying it's as good as like Watchmen or, you know, but it's wholesome. It's expertly crafted. The art is gorgeous, and it's one of those examples where it makes you appreciate the characters that, you know, you're in this because you like the characters of Yuka and Lele and their world, but you come out of it liking them even more than you did before. And you then cherish that piece, that expanded universe media, all the more because you could then never imagine those characters without it.
Yeah. One thing I really like about it, even just from the few pages I have read, is, you know, this writing isn't exactly like the writing in the games. They're the same characters, but kind of a different flavor of these characters. And I think that's awesome.
Yeah,
I think it's great that you kind of get to see these characters through someone else's eyes.
Yeah, and it works too. You never feel like it's not the accurate voices of the characters. It feels like more of a day in the life of Yuka and Lele, where they're going on an adventure. Yeah, they're getting into this like epic nonsense, but there is a more casual level that you would never see them at in a video game, where they're going on this life and death, you know, grand stakes kind of adventure pursuit. This is more of a lower key adventure, and a lot of the graphic novel revolves around just, like I said, their day to day, and it's kind of cool to see them in a more casual context.
Definitely. I can't wait to actually get into the meat of it.
Yeah. You know, DM Combo, I think, really demonstrated the flexibility that you can have with these characters and how much fun any of them can be. And coupled with Impossible Lair, it really just makes you appreciate the foundation of all of them in the original Ukulele all the more. And like I said, now, like, I don't even really need references to the DKU, even though both Impossible Lair and Cracklestone were full of them. But I'm really, like, invested in just this cast. And they are now, you know, almost of equal stature to the DKU legends that are the Kongs, Banjo and Kazooie, Conker, you know. Like they're right up there now. So it's great. It's really been a fun journey these past 5 years to eventually like be excited about this new studio and this game that they're working on, be a little skeptical over the name, but still be excited. Enjoy the game when it comes out, but then grow to just fall in love with their universe and their world. And just be so excited about what comes next. And we are going to be getting into what we hope comes next in just a little bit. But first, we have a couple calls to take about 5 years of Yuka and Laylee. So why don't we go ahead, we'll play them, we'll talk about them, and then we'll discuss what we hope to see coming from Playtonic next. All right, let's play the first call.
Hello, YL Hive. That does not roll off the tongue as easy. Anyways, it is me, the brittlest, nipplest Kevin. I see that you are talking about ukulele on my birthday, and I wanted to give a call. I don't really have much to say, but I did want to bring something up. Way back when you had done the initial playthrough of the game, breaking it down world by world, I had called in on Capital Casino. And in it, I was pretty fucking negative. And I would like to apologize. I think part of it, I was just playing up for a bit, which I think we can say a lot of us have done in the past. And while it's still maybe one of my least favorite levels, I definitely am not as angry about it. I still have nightmares about the inept fight, and especially the retro arcade game for that level. It was honestly completely broken, I think. But, yeah, I'm definitely not as angry as that phone call made me out to be. So I just wanted to call and clear that up and say that in that matter, I am in fact the butt milk. Anyways, keep everything up. I love you guys.
Well, thank you for the call, Brittle Nipples Kevin. And hey, happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Brittle Nipples Kevin.
You know, Brittle Nipples Kevin, I don't know if you're turning 5, but if you are, happy wood anniversary.
Make yourself a nice wood smoothie if you want.
Although, I guess if Brittle Nipples Kevin was turning 5, he would have been, like, just a newborn when he first played Capital Casino, which might be the reason he hated it so much. Because when you're newborn, you have no object permanence.
Yeah, he might be way better at it now. Might be a pro.
No worries. You know, look, we're all negative about things from time to time. And honestly, Capital Casino had its problems when it first came out, like the bug that kept you from 100% completion. Where, you know, the game would just not deliver you your final pagey. Luckily, they fixed it with the spit and polish patch, and I think Capital Casino is a delight now. Yes, it does have its problems. For example, the aforementioned Rextro game, Hurdle Hijinks. Fuck Hurdle Hijinks. Oh my god. I played it on stream, and it broke me, Dusto. It broke me. I did it. I was able to do it, but it took probably over 2 hours.
Isn't it awesome that you have to do it twice?
Yeah, that was great. I felt pretty good about myself when I did it the first time, and then I had to do it again. Like I said, the Rextro games are honestly probably the weakest part of the original ukulele. And there are many reasons for that, but I don't think Playtonic's at fault for it. It is what it is. And
yeah, I think the games themselves are fine in the context of the multiplayer mode, because I played these with my sister and we had a good time with them.
Uh-huh.
But when you put them in your main game and you got to do them twice to get a pagey for each time, that's when I'm kind of like, all right, well, not my favorite thing in the world.
It feels like padding to have to do them twice.
Yeah.
Especially if you get the high score the first time around, and then it just makes you do it arbitrarily. Like, it could just give you two pages right then, right?
Yeah, but that is something that the Banjo games do. Like, in the Saucer O'Peril, if you get the high score, then you just get the Jiggy and Pagey at the same time. Imagine if you just had to do it twice.
Sure, yeah. The Inept fight, I actually really like the Inept fight. It's hard, but and it's surprising. And you have to unlock it with the Kartos sequence, which are very frustrating in their own right. But I really like the boss fight. I thought it was clever. And it has one of the most banging, yes, banging boss fight tracks in the entire DKU. I think David Wise did it. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of the fight itself, just because I'm not a big fan of the Kartos parts in general, but I do like the idea of it. I think it's the most visually striking of the bosses, just being on this track with this giant inept. It's very memorable. Maybe I'd be better at it now, but boy, I was not good at it when I first played it.
Yeah, I remember barely scraping by the first time, and then when I did it on stream the other month, just slowly getting better and better at it and better at it. And I was like, all right, that was actually kind of fun. So,
And then it's a good thing they didn't follow that up by saying, now do it again and get the high score.
Yeah. So yeah. I mean, that's something I would be hopeful for a actual 3D platformer sequel to Yooka-Laylee, is scaling back some of the troublesome stuff like the Kartos sequences and just eliminating the Rextro games entirely. Like, Rextro is a great character. I love Rextro. I just don't like what he has to offer. Find another use for him.
Exactly.
Yeah. Just real quick, hello to Ray Day Pinball in a live stream chat. Ray Day says, Impossible Layer is better than Tropical Freeze, is the context of this, because Twit Coins were necessary as opposed to the puzzle pieces, which you could ignore. Also, F bleep time trials. I believe what Ray Day was saying was fuck time travels, but they're being very demure about it. They were, you know.
I appreciate the restraint.
Yeah, they were being polite because they didn't want unnecessary fucks in our podcast, which... Yeah, this is a family show, so I completely understand that.
I will say I like both the puzzle pieces and Twit Coins for different reasons. I actually really like unlocking the concept art bonuses. Being an artist myself, I love seeing all the...
brag much?
All the, well, you know. But I love seeing all the concept art and planned ideas they have for them. But yeah, they can just all be skipped. But on the one hand, I do think that might be a positive. Like, you know, Special Agent Ape, our friend Andrew, he likes to just run through these stages. So he can just ignore puzzle pieces and just do the platforming, which is great. And then anyone who wants the puzzle pieces can just find them. With Yooka-Laylee and the Impossible Layer, it does add more importance to these Twit Coins. But, you know, that also might slow the game down for some people. I don't have a problem with it, but I can definitely see that point of view. One thing I do prefer about the Twit Coins is that they're numbered. What a lifesaver that is.
Oh my god, that is such a nice little tweak. Because, that's the cumbersome thing about the puzzle pieces, is they're puzzle pieces, but they're all the same shape. And, you know, you don't know which one you're missing or where, unless you have squawks to, like, alert you to where a puzzle piece roughly is in a stage. But the Twit Coins are numbered, so if you, if you know, if you get one and three, well, then two is somewhere in the middle. It's
And after you get the coins, they're transparent in the stage, so you can still be like, all right, well, that's where the one coin is.
Right.
Now I know to look out for the two coin right after that.
It just kind of mashing up the Kong letters with the puzzle pieces in the retro.
Yeah.
Band, just putting them together, and you're like, oh, okay. All right, cool.
Yeah, very smart.
Also, hello to Violet Rain 3 says, hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us.
Yes, thank you. All right, let's take our second call. And then, Dasto, are you ready to speculate about, not just speculate, but also wish upon our podcast about what Ukulele and Playtonic games we would like to see next?
Maybe I will be ready after this call.
All right, I need you to think hard, or just let it come to you naturally and don't think at all. One of those two.
Oh, well, I guess we'll see.
All right, here we go.
Hey, DK Vine, it's Ray Day Pinball. I just had to call because I heard you're doing a ukulele episode, and I just want to make sure it gets the praise it deserves. I absolutely love ukulele, and I remember it like yesterday, where I was waiting for the Kickstarter copy to arrive, and it didn't. So I got in my car, and I head on over to the local GameStop minutes before they were closing, and managed to snag a physical copy so I could play it the day of its release. And then, of course, a couple days later, my Kickstarter edition one arrived, but I ended up just returning the other one. But anyway, I was so excited, and it was everything I had dreamed of. It was just like another Banjo game had manifested itself in the modern age, and every day after work, I would come home and put in a couple more hours on ukulele. And I hadn't had that same drive, that same want to just keep going in a game day after day since the Banjo days. Like, it was so great that something like that existed. And then they did it again with Impossible Lair. But I really hope they go back and make another, you know, Banjo-style 3D collectathon. That would be really cool, because I know I'm looking forward to it. And I just... yeah, I just say really well done on ukulele, Team Playtonic.
Well, hey, thank you, Rayday, for the call.
Thank you. My story is pretty much exactly the same. I wasn't going to get my Kickstarter copy of the game the day it was coming out, so I decided to just buy a copy and then give my Kickstarter copy to someone else.
So, my story was that because it was an international delivery, I had to pick it up at the post office because I wasn't there when they stopped by. So, they put the little notice on my door and they're like, well, we're not going to just drop it off on your stoop. You're going to have to drive to the post office and get in line like a rando. And
don't they know who you are? You're Heil Russell.
Right? And anyway, so I had to do it, and it was a pain, and I got the box, and I got it home, and I had all of my goodies in there. Because I gave a lot of money. Like, not as much money as some people did, but I gave a lot of money to this Kickstarter. This is the biggest Kickstarter I've ever, like, gone in on, and probably ever will go in on. It was ridiculous how much of my savings I put in.
So, I think it was the same for me. I think this is the most I've ever given to a Kickstarter.
Like, it wasn't enough to get my, like, name in, what was it? The Icymetric Palace. You know, I didn't have one of those plaques in Icymetric Palace, but I think I was just, like, a tier or so below that. And, I got a lot of the bells and whistles, and then when Limited Run did their edition, I was able to get the edition for that as well, because as a Kickstarter backer, they gave me the, you know, we'll cut you a deal, and you can get this very expensive Limited Run edition for this collector's edition for a very small price, since you've already done this before. So I got that. And then I've also gotten just the physical editions, the other physical editions over the years, just accumulated them. So I have...
As if I had another reason to be so jealous of you.
Yeah, but I'm not an artist like you.
That's true. That's my one claim to fame.
It's funny, because I also got a review copy of Ukulele, so I had it digitally a few days before it actually was released, and then I just have all the physical editions, you know, across Xbox and Switch, and I have PlayStation 4, and I'm like, I don't even have a PlayStation 4, and I have I have the Windows edition, and I'm like, I have like a CD-ROM disc or whatever for Ukulele. I'm like, okay, well, that's cool.
Oh yeah, I got that too, because it came with the trouser manual.
Yeah, the trouser. That sounds like it could be something dodgy. It was fun. It was fun. It was also fun to have a game come out in the spring here in the Northern Hemisphere. You know, like just like in the heart of spring to have this new big major release that meant so much for our community, because usually we have these big releases come out in the autumn or maybe the dead of winter or the sweltering heat of summer, but spring, this season of renewal, we got just that with Ukulele, so it just felt apropos all around. But Ray Day says that they would like to see a straight 3D platformer sequel to Ukulele. And we know that Playtonic has a lot of big plans right now because, you know, they're flush with all of this cash from Tencent. And they have a second studio now in Leamington Spa. And they... at least say their plan is to have at least 3 development teams working concurrently at any time, meaning that they would have theoretically 3 games in development at any time. I don't know if they currently have 3 games in development or what, but they've got a lot of stuff cooking right now. And there was some hope that this week they would have announced at least one of those projects, you know, to tie in with the 5th anniversary. They did not. They let Demon Turf, Neon Splash get all the hype, but that's fine. Sooner,
yeah,
rather than later, we will have our first idea of what they're working on. And, you know... if there are 3 concurrent projects, that really opens it up, right? It definitely keeps it from being limited. Whereas, you know, it's like, oh, I want a 3D platformer. No, I want a sequel to Impossible Lair. No, I want a different genre. No, I want a straight spinoff of a totally different character. Well, now everything is pretty much on the table because they have the resources, they have the time, they have the talent. And it hasn't felt like this since, I would say, E3 2001, when we had that just huge deluge of DKU announcements. We had 3 new Donkey Kong games, we had Banjo-Kazooie Granny's Revenge, we had, you know, Saber Wolf for the GBA, even though we wouldn't realize it was DKU for, you know, another 20 years or so. we had Star Fox Adventures. The last time it felt like we had this much room for aggressive expansion was before the buyout. The buyout kind of slowed everything down a little bit, as well as the realities of modern game development. And it took, I think, a bunch of X-Rare staff, along with some newer and younger talent, to form their own indie studio for us to get back there, for the potential and possibility to be back there, where you don't need to have a AAA release necessarily, and you can get games out at a speedier clip. So, yeah, it really, really just opens up that level of excitement. And now that I'm this invested in the characters, it really makes speculating and daydreaming about what we could see a true possibility, not just pie in the sky malarkey like it honestly is nowadays. Like, you know, back in the day, back in the late 90s, early aughts, you could actually sit back with your friends, with your chums, and, you know, say, okay, which Diddy Kong Racing character would we like to see get the spinoff next? And you could have a legitimate discussion, actual discourse about it, and it wouldn't seem so far-fetched. I remember back on Scribes in the day, the actual push for Tip Top to get his own game. There was Tip Top Fever, Dusto. We all had it. We all felt it. It wasn't just the ramblings of the deranged DK Vine forum members or the, let's face it, sad man children who founded the site. But it was true. It was real. It was something that the fandom felt was plausible. And it feels plausible now with Playtonic, and that is thrilling, you know? Like,
yeah.
I love what Rare's doing. I Sea of Thieves is my second favorite game of all time. I'm really looking forward to Everwild, but you know, Everwild's been in development for a long time, and it's probably going to be in development for a long time. So it's kind of cool that we have this happening with Playtonic elsewhere, you know, where we can get games, three games in development at once, and maybe, you know, a steady release eventually, like maybe a release every year. That, yeah, awesome, cool, you know, best of both worlds. So,
yeah, exactly. More stuff from the people I like. I'm all for it.
Yeah. So let's daydream. Let's speculate. This isn't necessarily predictions, because I don't think we're not in any position to give legitimate predictions. But I know what I want. I know what I would like to see. And I can, you know, read between the lines sometimes and kind of guess what they might be working on. So, what ukulele / Playtonic developed games would we like to see next? And I will start. I will be a greedy little goblin here. because I would love to see Yuka Karty. I don't know what you would actually call it. That's a terrible name, so probably not call it that. But, yeah, I know it's trite, it's cliche. I know this is something that everybody would say they would want to see. Oh, what other genres would we like to see this cast with? Well, the racing game, right? Like, but, guess what? I want to see the racing game. I don't care. I don't care how boring of an answer it is. Because, let's be honest, we need a Diddy Kong Racing style racing adventure. We need it now more than ever. And it's a niche that's not being filled by Nintendo. Despite what Kevin Callahan promised us way back when, it's not. We're getting DLC for Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. We're getting Mario Kart Tour. They're both fine and fun in their own right, but they're probably not going to be chipping into their Mario Kart sales anytime soon with something as fanciful as Diddy Kong Racing. Well, who do we turn to? Playtonic. And I think they could really have some fun with this concept.
Yeah, I'd be really down for this. You know, I feel like ever since the first ukulele, this has been an idea that some people have talked about here and there. And I don't know why, but for some reason, to me, it feels so weird to think of an indie studio making like a full-on kart racer like Diddy Kong Racing. But I know they could do it, and I'd love to see it. I don't know why, it just feels like a bigger step to me than even a 3D platformer. It shouldn't be, but... No. I guess it's just because Nintendo has such a, I don't want to say a stranglehold. Other people make kart racers, but, you know, they have Mario Kart, and then there's, like, Crash Team Racing, et cetera, and they just feel like big AAA games. I don't think I can really think of very many indie kart racers, but I'd be all for it. I would love to see just another kart racer, like you said, like Diddy Kong Racing, just with its own cast of fun, unique characters.
Yeah, you could, you know, bring in characters like Nimble, the racing cloud. Like, she would be a fun addition to actually put her in her element. She could, like, serve the role of your bumper or drumstick, just be the racing aficionado in the game. You could bring in characters like Biebs from off of Demon Turf, you know, like you could further establish the link between those properties, or you could even go the Diddy Kong Racing route and introduce brand new characters that would then reappear down the line in future Playtonic games. Like,
that sounds so good.
Just mix it all in. Like, give us this, and more importantly, like, have there be a story. Don't just have it be the characters race because they race, because this is a racing game. Yippee! Like, have something ludicrous in there, like extraterrestrial pig warlord wizard who comes down and says, like, hey, I'm taking over, but maybe you can race me. maybe they can come up with a better plot than that, because who would buy that? But, you know, I would love to see, I know Playtonic and Gavin Price have said, like, they want to get away from spiritual sequels. Like, that was really a hindrance to the original Yooka-Laylee, just trying to make it like Banjo-Kazooie and you know, all the expectations therein. But, you know, Impossible Lair may have not been billed or marketed as a spiritual successor to, say, Donkey Kong Country or the Overworld to Conker's Pocket Tales or Saberwolf GBA, but, you know, it was. It married a bunch of different concepts, and I think you could do that with Diddy Kong Racing. I know, you know, the people at Playtonic love their kart racers. They play them, you know, they spend their lunches, or at least they did when they weren't as many of them working from home, but, you know, they would play things like Mario Kart. So I know they understand what makes the genre work, and I know they probably have ideas on how to improve on it. And so if you could marry that with the Diddy Kong Racing adventure concept, which I really feel like is such an underserved idea. I feel like Mario Kart in particular, they'll nick ideas here or there, right? But it's just been coasting on the name brand for decades now. And we really need some innovation. I know Crash Team Racing has kind of filled that role, but I would really love to see what Playtonic could do.
Yeah, definitely. I love Mario Kart. I love CTR, but I'm always down to see someone else's take. That's part of why I like CTR, is because it does so many things different from Mario Kart. And I'd love to see what Playtonic could bring to the table, both in terms of mechanics and new characters.
Yeah, and the character, like, having an entire game, an entire racing game where I love every single character, and it's not just, you know, a character that's the same character, but they're holding up a big sausage. Oh my god, like, I can't even imagine.
That is a good one, though.
I was watching your Idaho Crew stream of Diddy Kong Racing the other week, and I was having so much fun just watching friends of mine play Diddy Kong Racing. And it was just this, like, this crystallizing moment for me where I haven't seen friends of mine play Diddy Kong Racing since I played Diddy Kong Racing with my friends in, like, 1997, 1998, right?
Right.
So I might have played it when I lived with Chad, like, back in 2009, right? So, and even then, like, I think one of us got drunk and wandered away. So I had so much fun seeing people I know having fun playing Diddy Kong Racing, and just, like, I was like, I love all of these characters, I love all of these tracks, I love all of these environments, I love the world, I love the story, I love the nonsense. I want more of this. And it's so frustrating to me that we had this game in 97 and so little has been done with it. This very concept of a sequel is cursed. So Yeah, Yooka-Cardi is my number one draft pick for potential platonic projects down the line.
I would love it. Yeah, I really do feel like that's the first one that comes to mind for me. It just feels right when you have this cast of characters. It just feels right to get them in a game all together. That is one of the strengths of CTR, is it takes these characters you've known from the games you've been playing over the years, and it gives you a chance to play as some of them for like the first time. Like, imagine being able to play as, say, Rodney. Imagine being able to having Rodney in the roster and being like, yes, I get to race as Rodney the Blamphibian.
Dream come true. if only my parents could see me now. Well, back to Rayday's call. Rayday said they wanted to see Tuca Lele. And I'm calling it Tuca Lele because that's the fun fanon name for it, for this project, although I think Platonics used it as well. Tuca Lele, the actual sequel to the original ukulele. This one I think is even more likely than Yukicardi, or at least we could see it first. I think a Tuca Lele is definitely, I mean look, let's be honest, it was pretty much inferred in that interview Gavin Price did when they announced the Tencent deal. Nintendo Life tweeted about it. Even if it was misreading the interview, Platonic then retweeted it. They unretweeted it. So whatever happened there, I do think it's in the works. I think it's coming. And I think Platonic is probably hungry. They've heard the criticism about the original ukulele for 5 years, and they're like, all right, let's do it right. And just, yeah, you know,
that's why I'm most excited for it.
Yeah.
They've shown that they're so willing to listen to feedback that I have no doubt that whenever they get around to doing another 3D platformer, that they've just learned so many lessons that I just have no doubt that it'll be a lot better.
Yeah, one area they don't have to improve is the way it controls.
Oh, definitely.
Ukulele was as smooth as vegan butter, which I guess is less smooth than dairy butter. So I was just trying to keep it, you know, keep it animal product free for our audience. But it wouldn't take much, right? You just tweak the bits that don't work. And you know, what you mentioned about the unified art style in a possible layer, like, imagine that with...
I can't wait, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the more I think about it, because honestly, like, when you're, like, listening, oh, what would you like to see them do next? Just another ukulele is one of the initially less appealing options, at least in my opinion, because you're like, well, no, I'd want them to see... They did this 2D platformer so well, I'd want them to do kart racing, I'd want them to do a puzzle game. I want to see all the different Platonic varieties we can get. Why would I want them to see something... Why would I want to see something they've already done? But, you know, they haven't maybe met their full potential with the 3D platformer. Not to say that the original ukulele wasn't quite enjoyable. So, yeah. This is probably the one we're going to have announced next, if those stories from last autumn are any indication. So, fingers crossed. I'm excited to see what they've got in the works.
Yeah, bring it on. To me personally, I do think that might be the most exciting option for, you know, reasons I've already said. I'm very excited to see what they can improve on after both games, like not just the lessons they learned from Ukulele itself, but Impossible Lair. What sort of things did they learn there that could be applied to a 3D platformer as well?
Yeah. Also, how are they going to utilize the pirate treasure from the original
ukulele? Oh, yeah, I totally forgot about that.
And what has Inept from the toy box been counting up to on the pirate ship in Galleon Galaxy?
Oh, man. Adam brought that up. My roommate Adam, a friend of the show, ate the ACZ. He brought that up the other day, and I just completely forgot that was even a thing. I remember when the game first came out, I was like, oh, what's he counting down to? What's it going to lead up to? And then over the years, I just totally forgot it even existed.
Yeah, and you know, you put the pieces together, Pirate Treasure, Galleon Galaxy, there's some sort of connection there. Will Tukulele involve pirate ships? What about the Batship Crazy? Are we going to get the origin behind that? Where is this all going? I don't know, but I think it's going to be, I think it's going to pay off in an exciting way. I think there is a clear plan there, so we're just going to have to wait and see.
I got goosebumps.
Well, does my next idea give you goosebumps, Dusto? Because a game that Gavin Price has been joking about in interviews after interview. I think he made a joke about it on the developer commentaries. It's come up again and again. When they announced Platonic Friends, I think he did a joke about it. The fact that Capital B was dressed as a golfer in Mighty Fight Federation. The fact that there is a random golf course in Ukulele and Impossible Layers Overworld. A golf game. Specifically, where Capital B is a golfer.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be down for it. I wouldn't say I'm like the biggest golf guy out there, but I have a good enough time with things like Mario Golf or what's that? Kirby's Dream Course.
Was sweet. Yeah, I never got that far in it, but for whatever reason, it was from that era where. That era just around the time of Donkey Kong Country where I was still playing everything. Every Nintendo release I would at least rent. Like you would go to Blockbuster because I'm old. I'm an old man and I remember Blockbuster. I remember going into Blockbuster every Friday, picking out my video game for the weekend, and I would rent it and I would take it home and I would play it on my old TV, and that would be
you got Kirby's Dream Course in one hand and your heart pills in the other.
Yeah, I was old even then. No, I actually bought Kirby's Dream Course because it was on sale at whatever weird store was in the mall that wasn't GameStop at the time. I owned it. I still own it somewhere. I don't know where it is, but yeah, it was enjoyable, and that was like one of those games where I was like, after Donkey Kong Country, I was like, oh, imagine if they did a Donkey Kong game in this style, and I, you know,
a Donkey Kong golf game.
Yeah, well,
I'm just picturing the sprite of DK when he's doing his roll attack, except you hit him with a club.
Yeah, I mean, remember when E3 2004 rolled around and we misread the sign that there was leaked. Show floor pictures from like the day before, and we saw in the background this blurry image with the Donkey Kong logo, and we misread it as Donkey Kong Golf.
Yeah, it turned out to be Jungle Beat, right?
It was Jungle Beat, yeah, but for whatever reason, the original Jungle Beat logo angled and blurred and in the background and grainy, looked like Donkey Kong Golf. So for a day, we entertained the notion that we were getting a Donkey Kong Golf game. And let me tell you, that was the greatest day of my life.
It was all downhill after that. I remember it like it was yesterday. I remember that happening on the forum. I remember people bringing up Donkey Kong Golf. That's what it's got
to
be.
I mean, it takes me back again to just a couple of years before that when it felt like anything was possible. We were getting Donkey Kong Coconut Crackers. We're getting two Diddy Kong Racing sequels. It felt like we could be getting any genre with Donkey Kong or the DKU. A territory that's really only occupied nowadays on the Nintendo side of things by, like, Mario. Maybe mm-hmm. Zelda will get, you know, a side game. Kirby will always get something. But, yeah, and, like, none of the other franchises really have that whole ecosystem of other games anymore. And so, yeah, if it is a golf game, which, you know, for whatever reason, we at DK Vine have always had a long association with golf games, both playing them and celebrating them. And I would be all about this. I would love to see what Playtonic could do with the concept, because we never saw this from Rare back in the day, right? We never saw Banjo-Kazooie Golf. We never saw Donkey Kong Golf, for as much as we joked about it. So if we... For example, if you took what they did with Diddy Kong Racing, how they turned the kart racing genre on its head, when it was still relatively young, imagine what they could have done with something like golf. It wouldn't have just been like Mario Golf, which is a fine golf game, but it's basically just golf with Mario and maybe a few little like modes that, you know, gussy it up and make it a little bit more whimsical. I love the Mario Golf games, but, you know, They're not as, I think, inventive as Diddy Kong Racing was to that genre.
Right. Yeah, that would definitely be exciting. We haven't seen these people make any sort of golf game, so I wouldn't even begin to know what they would do with it.
Of course.
I'd love to find out.
Of course, it's also possible that this is just one long prank by Gavin Price, and he's just having a laugh, but he's continually alluding to a game that doesn't really exist. He just wants us to think it exists, and we always think the next Playtonic game is going to be the golf game, and it never turns out to be the golf game, because they never really have any intention of making a golf game.
This is the year.
It's the new Saberman Stampede. Oh my god. Another possibility, since we talked about the ukulele sequel, we could one day get a sequel to Impossible Lair. I find this less likely, but oh, I can't tell you how excited I would be if we did get, you know, assuming three games are in development at the same time. I think it increases the likelihood that maybe one day we will get a straight sequel to Impossible Lair. And oh, that would be a huge, that would be, for me at least, that would be so thrilling, because Impossible Lair, like I said, it's quickly climbing the ranks in my top 10 favorite games already. And so just getting that would be like almost as exciting as a new Donkey Kong Country game getting announced for me.
Yeah, agreed. I'd be all for it, but at the same time, I have no idea how they could build on it. I'd love to see what they could do, but it feels like Impossible Lair. I guess kind of like what I brought up earlier, just having so few level archetypes, they could really build on that. But as far as like gameplay goes, I can't even imagine how they would improve on it, because it's just so good already.
Yeah. I mean, when in doubt, always add bears.
That's true. I guess I have my answer. I'll be upset if there's no bears in it.
You know, Donkey Kong Country 3 for the Game Boy Advance had 14 bears. Let's
double it.
Yeah. They're just like a starburst on the game package that says, with 28 bears. Largest amount ever.
How could anyone see that at their local game store and not buy it? Mom, this has 28 bears in it.
That's almost 30.
Oh, I hope that doesn't turn off some people. I hope some people don't see it and be like, 28, and they could have had 30.
Oh, or they see 28 bears and they scream out of fright. And then
that's way too many bears in one spot.
They go hide in like the diaper section. Assuming this is like Target or something. You know, I'm not saying like GameStop has a diaper section.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe they shouldn't have used so many exclamation marks after after saying there's 28 bears. They didn't want to scare people.
28 exclamation marks, one for each bear, just to help sell it.
Oh, man, I'd be scared after that. You have that many exclamation marks, they're trying to warn you of something.
Yeah, they actually just, there's no game, they just, like, vacuum packed real life bears in the box.
They're not very clear about it in the marketing. It's a big surprise for everyone.
We do need bears in Platonic's neck of the woods. I know they're probably avoiding bears because they want to avoid the obvious, you know, connections, but
I can see that.
Yeah. But I think with enough time, throw in a bear. Bears make everything better. Unless you're afraid of bears, and then you're...
And it makes it worse.
Yeah, then
28 times worse.
You'll be hiding in the diapers. So everything we've listed so far has been hinted by Platonic, or it's just obvious, right? Something right. That the fans have been talking about. Let's think outside the box. Now, when we first interviewed Chris Sutherland back in season 3 of The Conversation, he said they wanted to build a shared universe. And we took that to mean, you know, the Diddy Kong Racing method, like taking these characters and giving them their own franchises. So it wouldn't just be Yooka-Laylee and the blank. It would be, no, we're just completely removing Yooka-Laylee from this game. It's going to star this supporting character. And that was the theory before Impossible Lair. Oh, their next game is going to be... well, the biggest theory was about Shell. Shell from Galleon Galaxy and her war with the Blamphibians. That was the biggest hunch people had, was they're going to make a Jet Force Gemini spiritual successor or something of that sort. But they thought that there was so much lore cooked in with Shell that she was the obvious choice for the next game. And then, no, the next game was just Yooka-Laylee. But I still think there's merit here. I still think there's potential.
Definitely. And I love Jet Force Gemini, but boy, that's a game that could use some updates. If any game could use a sequel, or even, I want to avoid the terms spiritual successor, right, like Platonic does, but that is a game that it's great, but there's potential to be greater. And I feel like they could capitalize on that with this idea.
Yeah, just a game set in the outer space world of Galleon Galaxy, but beyond Galleon Galaxy, with Shell and the Blamphibian homeworld. And, you know, Yooka-Laylee don't appear in it at all. They're never even mentioned. Like, That would be thrilling. That would be the kind of world building that I really sink my teeth into. So I'm still hopeful this is a possibility. And as more time goes on and the further away we get from the original Yooka-Laylee, maybe it becomes less likely, just like it's less likely that we're going to be getting that tipped up game. But you know, who knows, you know. Again, I feel like Platonic's really all about celebrating their ecosystem of characters, and they're never going to let them go to waste. So, you know, maybe we will see Shell pop up in another Yooka-Laylee game, and then they can build towards their own game eventually. We don't just need to go in cold with Shell v. Blamphibian, or whatever they call it.
Yeah, maybe... for now, it is more important that they build up that Yooka-Laylee brand,
sure,
and spin off later. Because, you know, you look back even at Nintendo, you know, they had some different series, but it really was just like, I don't know. Maybe I'm off on this because they had plenty. They had like Mario, Metroid, Zelda. I was just saying, you know, it's probably more important that... they establish Yooka-Laylee as a brand before spinning off, but I would love to see it eventually.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I very much agree that Ukulele and Impossible Lair was the right call to make. And even then, people were confused. They thought it was just DLC for the original Ukulele. I don't know how that happened. I don't know how so many people slept on that, but...
Yeah, that's weird, especially since, like, if you see it, there's no mistaking it for the first game. It's just totally its own thing.
But, yeah, had they just gone in completely cold with something like, here it is, everybody, the game you've been waiting for, Planker! I think it would have...
Finally, yes!
I think it would have been even more, like, miserable. I think everybody would have just been like, no.
Yeah, especially since the first game did kind of get that lukewarm reaction from people. I feel like if you just did a totally different game with different characters, Ukulele would be a forgotten brand. People wouldn't want more Ukulele.
Yeah.
And the fact that they were able to, you know, say, no, we're sticking with this world and this characters, and we're going to give you a really great second game that was received much more positively. That shows that they're in it for the long haul and shows that Ukulele have staying power.
Yeah, yeah. I think that critical reception to Impossible Lair has definitely given the original Ukulele more legs now, because people have gone back and reevaluated it, and it's definitely has a fan base. It wasn't just a flash in a pan, you know. Sure, not everybody who backed the Kickstarter stayed with it, but they definitely have a loyal following, and that is vitally important going forward. So they've done everything right so far. But what other characters would we like to see? Like, in this hypothetical future, where they can indulge themselves and get away from the Ukulele brand, but use characters introduced in Ukulele. Another character I would really like to see them do more with, and I don't know if, you know, you would actually have her anchor the game or not, but Clara, the skeleton explorer that you see throughout the original Ukulele, I think she has so much potential, and I might be the only one, because it seems like nobody else talks about her as much as I do, but I think you could really get into the whole, like, pulpy Indiana Jones vibe that Donkey Kong and Saberwolf and other properties, you know, have walked in. And I don't know. I think she's just a cool, fun character. She's a skeleton lady in a pith helmet. I think it's fun.
Yeah. As soon as I saw Clara, she seemed custom made. She seemed like she was born to have her own adventures. And you know, she is a living skeleton. I was talking with another friend about this. I think it's kind of cheating when you make a character a skeleton, because then they're just automatically good. You don't have to do anything else. I can't think of a single bad skeleton character. Every single one I think of from, like, movies, animated shows, video games, every single skeleton, every single fictional skeleton character is just amazing.
I think it's because it's just such an outrageously stupid concept. Yeah. We know, like, intellectually, wait, why is there a skeleton walking around? Why is that skeleton talking? Why is that skeleton drinking Dr. Pepper?
Why is that skeleton drinking brisk iced tea and turning into a snowman?
I adore Clara. I adore that she befriended the very pot she was cooked in and apparently lost her flesh in. I think she's great.
That sort of thing bonds you.
I definitely want them to do more with her, and I think eventually she could definitely headline her own game. I know people aren't, you know, taking to the streets demanding a Clara from Off the Ukulele Game yet. But I have hoped us, though, within 10 years or so, this will be our future.
They'll feel bad they ever doubted Clara.
What about you? What characters or concepts would you like to see from Playtonic?
Ooh.
I gave you plenty of time to think about it.
That's true. You know what's one I'd love to see them do more with? I don't necessarily know if they would be able to carry a whole solo game, but just on the concept of characters we want to see do more, I want to see them do more with Dr. Quack, because I feel like he's a character I'm not 100% on board with yet.
Yeah, they've hinted at things like with Vile and like him having a greater prominence in the organization than Capital B. Mm-hmm. But we like, I think him sitting out the entirety of Impossible Lair, as he was alluded to, because his Quack bombs and his like company logo still appeared throughout it, but he himself was not in it. So I think that, yeah, he's just kind of been undercooked a little bit.
I like, he was just mainly used for those quizzes in the first game, which I wasn't a massive fan of. But I'd love to see them do more with him, kind of establish him more as his own character. Another one I really like, Dr. Puzz.
Oh,
I feel like Dr. Puzz is another one who vastly improved between the first game and the other stuff that came out after. She doesn't just feel like the Mumbo Jumbo XP anymore.
Dr. Puzz is fantastic, and you're right, Dr. Puzz became fantastic, especially with her further appearances in Crackle Stone and Impossible Lair. And
even in the first game, she didn't, you know, she had enough going that she wasn't just Mumbo Jumbo. You know, she's a scientist. She has her own rivalry with Dr. Quack, and that's cool. But at the end of the day, she really was just, you go to her for the transformations. And I like that in Impossible Lair, and from what I've seen, Crackle Stone, they do a lot more of with her, which is great. I'm glad that they're able to really build on these characters. And it's something that they even did with the Banjo games, too. Like, the first Banjo game, I think, has some charming writing in it, but it really does feel like a first draft for a lot of these characters, you know, figuring them out. And then in Tui, they just go all in on the comedic writing. That's one of the reasons I prefer it over Kazooie. And I feel like that's exactly what happens with Ukulele. You know, the more comfortable they get with these characters, the more they're able to stand on their own and really make an impression.
Yeah, I mean, look at Banjo-Tooie and like where it took Klungo as a character.
Yeah, exactly. Klungo was nothing in Kazooie.
Yeah.
We loved him, but Tooie is really where he gets his time to shine.
Right, and Dr. Puzz has also been fleshed out. Just the knowledge that it turns out she was actually always a squid or an octopus or whatever.
I love that.
Yeah, and that it was just the human DNA grafted onto her, not vice versa. Was just that little revelation, I think, made all of the difference in the world. And you're like,
yeah,
oh, she's fantastic. she's a great character. All right, I am on
actually.
Board.
You know what? Something I just thought of while talking about Dr. Puzz right now. So in both Ukulele and the Banjo games, I kind of feel like the transformation aspect is not very well utilized in any of them. Like, even the Banjo games, which I love to death, I don't necessarily think the transformations are one of the reasons why. And when Impossible Lair came out, I gotta be honest, I didn't miss transformations. So I wonder if you could make a game starring Dr. Puzz that is just all about that, like really builds on the transformation aspect, like maybe a sort of 3D platformer where all of Dr. Puzz's moves just are built around transforming into different things. And you have to figure out like all right, what do I transform into here? What can this transformation do? And just build a game around that and really be able to let that concept flourish on its own.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you could really have potential there, Dusto. You know what? Why don't you write up a pitch and, you know, just send it over to Playtonic. I'll give you their address.
Oh, I'm on it.
All right. Well, one game. This is completely far fetched. But I've got to share it because I am who I am. Donkey Kong.
Who?
Donkey Kong. I think it would be amazing if Playtonic could one day get so big and so trusted within the industry that they would have a chance to make a Donkey Kong game.
Yeah, I totally agree. I've had this exact same thought.
You know, even if Nintendo EPD has the reins, as is rumored and leaked, from now on, it could still be a side game, right? Just like, Ubisoft does the Mario plus Rabbids games. You know, there's room for other interpretations of Mario. You know, it could even be a 2D platformer if EBT has other plans for Donkey Kong. If it's a 3D platformer or some sort of hybrid, you know. After Impossible Lair, I think they could make a fantastic Donkey Kong platformer. And if I'm just being greedy and honest, I would just love to see some of this creative talent get a crack at the Kongs.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I've had that exact same idea, and I feel like at the end of the day, like, I can't speak for anyone at Playtonic, but I would assume that it might be a little more rewarding to, work with your own IP and really establish what you want. But, you know, I would think it would be equally as exciting to come back to the world of Donkey Kong. And yeah, exactly like you said, they've proven that they could make a game that rivals a Donkey Kong Country game on a much smaller scale, even. Like, Impossible Lair came so close. Some people like it better, like you. Impossible Lair is creeping up on Tropical Freeze. Just imagine what they could do if they were given the keys to the Donkey Kong series.
Yeah, and I know what I said. Like, I don't necessarily need any more references to the DKU. Like, I'm invested enough in Playtonic's own cast, and I do think it is more rewarding for them because they are attached to their own creations and their own IP, and they don't necessarily want to sacrifice that by, you know, working with another studio's creation. But given that, you know, Kev Bayless and Steve Mayles, who were responsible for, you know, much of the major DK characters that Nintendo now uses, you know, Diddy Kong, the modern Donkey Kong, K. Rool, Dixie Kong, Mark Stevenson is also there, who designed a lot of the secondary Donkey Kong, like Animal Buddies and some of the Kremlings, and, you know, it would be fun to see what other people at Playtonic could do with Donkey Kong, like Daily, or Hamish, you know, like, it would just be really, really cool and validating to see them get to go back to it. Even if it was just a one-off, you know? Just as a Donkey Kong fan, I can't think of any other studio that would really get me as excited as Playtonic themselves. It would just bring everything full circle. And hey, yeah, you could even get Yooka-Laylee to make cameos in it to really just unite everything the way we like it united.
Yeah, I mean, that feels like such a, it feels like a shoot for the stars sort of idea, but it totally could happen.
Honestly, I could see it happening more than a Clara adventure at this point, so that's more far-fetched. but yeah, I mean, other than that, you know, I think that's pretty much my definitive list of what I would like to see. I would also want to be surprised, you know, like I wasn't expecting Impossible Lair and look where it is for me now. Like I cherish it. So, you know, I don't want them to just meet my expectations. I'm fully expecting and hoping they surpass them and just wow me with something I would have never wanted in my life, but then couldn't live without. Like, I don't know, a Knights of Hamelot game. No, I'm joking. They're terrible. They're terrible characters, and they should die.
This has been a File 2 production.
Kerikoh.